And now, Mr. Siegel, with all of the work that you've done as a successful Canadian politician, a political strategist, an author, a commentator, an academic, a former senator, and a mentor to our interns at the NATO Association of Canada, what would you say have been your most memorable moments, along with some of the most rewarding aspects associated with the work that you've done?
Well, probably as a chairman of the Senate Anti-Terrorism Committee, probably the most significant event that I can recall is my chance to visit with Canadian NATO forces in Afghanistan. And that was in 2011. And I was there with the Chief of the Defense Staff and the Minister of National Defense, who was the Minister McKay. And the ability to meet the Afghan Minister of Defense, to visit at forward operating bases, some secret bases, and at our main operation in Kandahar, the men and women who constituted the 2,500 Canadians who cycled through many times over the 12-year duration of the war, to see them defending the critical values that we share in this country by virtue of what they were doing was very powerful. I'll just give you one small story, which I've talked about elsewhere publicly. We were at a forward operating base in Peshawar district in Kandahar province, the Minister of National Defense, Chief Defense Staff, myself. We arrived at the base. It was under the control of the Van Deuxième Royale Regiment of Canada, 22nd Van Deuxième Royale. And we were being toured around the base, meeting different men and women in uniform and the various tasks they were doing. And then there was this observation tower just by the wire, which we climbed up, to get a look at the terrain beyond the base. And beyond the base, there was this sort of three-story, Stalin-esque, flat, birthday cake kind of building, which flew the Afghan flag and in whose parking lot was parked a Canadian armored personnel carrier. And I looked at the building and I said to the young female lieutenant colonel who was escorting us, "Colonel, what's that building?" She says, "Well, that, sir, before we came into this area, was Taliban headquarters. And it was a pretty rough place. Sharia law, extreme Sharia law was dispensed. We think there were beheadings. We know there was torture. There were difficult prison cells. It's a very, very difficult spot." I said, "Well, what is it now?" She looked at me and she said, "Senator, it's a girls' school under the protection of the Canadian forces. It's part of our NATO remit in this part of the world." So that's when you understand that while we abhor violence and we abhor having to necessarily go to other places and kill the enemy because they're threatening our friends and allies, on the other hand, you know, the amount of kids going to school now in Afghanistan, the amount of girls is, you know, 25,000 times what it ever was. The level of economic growth, the level of investment, the level of access to healthcare. So it's not perfect, but it is far better for NATO, having been there and having maintained a training relationship, which is still there, and Canadian forces having made the sacrifices that they made in defense of our NATO values. I would say, for me as an individual, as a Canadian, that was one of the great, great moments. And I've been to other battlefield areas. I've been to Bosnia, for example, where our forces were involved in the NATO operation, which followed UNPROFOR after the Dayton Peace Accords, where our people were in the most difficult, most heavily mined turf in the history of the world. And they were there to protect civilian populations so people could get on with their lives and kids could go to school safely and people could go to their grocery store in their neighborhood and find food. So those are the sorts of things that remind us that unless you are prepared to intervene, things get worse and things don't get better.
And now, Mr. Siegel, with the significance of NATO and the significance of the work that our association is doing, where would you say you see the future of NATO now with all of these changes happening?
I'm sort of hopeful that President Trump's desire to make sure that all of America's allies pay their way, pay their fair share, will mean that in order for America to renew its commitment to NATO, which is absolutely fundamental to NATO, there will have to be evidence of countries that are spending beneath the 2%, and sadly Canada is one of them, stepping up with a real measured plan to increase our investment. Now, the argument that's made by what I like to refer to as the 1% gang, the people who say we're spending enough, is, well, we spend it in ways where we have deployable forces, that any time NATO needs help, Indians are ready to deploy, air, sea, land, etc. And that other countries who get over 2% charge things, and they count things in their 2%, like pension payments to retired soldiers and things, which isn't really about deployability. I think that's avoiding the issue. The issue is that we have not really, since the days Louis Saint-Laurent was Prime Minister of Canada, which is a long time ago, really spent our fair share and been a leader. And I have always said, both within NATO and beyond that, before that, that Canada needs to commit, and I hope it happens this year, to a regular force of 150,000, of which 100,000 would be regular force, and 50,000, would be reserves, so a total force of 150,000. That we do have to have a plan to get to a 60-ship fighting navy on both coasts that has both blue water and littoral capacity, and we do have to make the decision on the next generation of fighter aircraft, which, as we sit here, Israelis and others are embracing the F-35. Most of our NATO partners have embraced 35. And in order for Canadian forces to multiply their impact, they have to be interoperable with our NATO colleagues. The vast majority of our NATO colleagues will, in fact, be using the F-35, and it's, I hope, only a matter of time before we end up in the right place.
And now, Mr. Siegel, in addition to your involvement with NATO as the chair of the NATO Association of Canada, you have also been involved in a pilot project. So, Mr. Siegel, this has been covered in the media. I'm just going to touch on this question. You are proposing that people between the ages of 18 to 65 who are living under the low-income poverty line in Ontario will earn a basic income of at least $1,320 per month. Individuals with disabilities will receive $500 more. I think that this pilot project is one of the greatest things for Ontario, and I think that other provinces would follow this project as well. There are many benefits associated in supporting our families and supporting those individuals who live below the poverty line and are exposed to poverty. I think that this would be a great way of alleviating poverty in Ontario.
So I can mark you down as undecided.
As decided. I'm 100% for this. And I want you to discuss what this would mean for Canada and how this would shape Canada and our future.
So let me just, I'll just make reference to a piece on a competing website, not as good as ours, the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, and I did a piece 2 weeks ago. Julie's read it because she sent me a comment about how the two agendas, strategic global security and defense on the one hand, and domestic income fairness on the other, are actually beginning to merge. And they're beginning to merge in this way. If you look at the people who voted for Brexit, breaking up the EU, if you look at the people in the Midwestern United States who, surprisingly for some, voted for Mr. Trump, they can all be characterized as folks who are facing real income insecurity, either because jobs have decreased or because support levels aren't sufficient. And so their concern was that while since the advent of free trade about 20 or so years ago, corporate profits have gone up by about 350%, wages have gone up in that same period of time by about 53 or 54%. So people aren't keeping pace, which means too many people live beneath the poverty line in Ontario, in Canada, and in other free Western countries. If you think about how we stopped the totalitarian communists after World War II, we had a two-pronged response. One was NATO, military capacity, knowing that they would face the full wrath of Western military technology and commitment if they went over the line. But there was also something called the Marshall Plan, a huge investment led by the Americans, to allow Europeans to rebuild their societies after the ravages of war and all the difficulties that had caused. I think we now have to understand that if we're going to counter Putinism, if we're going to counter the Putin view that liberal democracy is a failure, that you need an authoritarian society with one religion, orthodoxy, if we're going to do all that, we have to deal with two issues. The one is the one that NATO is primarily focused on, which is military security and cooperation between free allies. And the other one is the issue of economic opportunity for the vast majority of people who are not in the 1%. And I think that's where something like the basic income pilot is a way of gathering the evidence. In a province, the good thing about Ontario is that, you know, we have a lower rate of unemployment now than some other provinces. But we do have 15% of our population who live beneath the poverty line. And what we know about those people is that they will get sick sooner, they will be in hospital quicker, they will live shorter lives, their kids will not finish high school or university, there'll be more family violence, there'll be more substance abuse, there'll be a host of things which make their lives really, really difficult, and by definition, become very costly for the rest of society. So that is why I think the pilot that Ontario has committed to is very important, and I was honored to be given the chance to give my best advice as someone who has supported a basic income for almost four decades now in all my political and business and academic work, to actually give some advice on how the pilot might be structured to get the evidence we need before policy change can be made.